Blog Talk Radio. Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. Thank you one and all for hanging out with me on this post-debate morning or afternoon, depending on where you are. Wow. I think, you know, for anybody who is a big political geek, those of us who are big political geeks, wow, this is like it's like the Super Bowl and the World Series and the Stanley Cup and NBA Finals. It's Christmas and New Year's, baby, all wrapped up into one. It was a fascinating night last night for anybody who watched the debate, watched the primetime debate. I didn't catch the first debate. I've seen bits and pieces of it online, clips and stuff. And, you know, I don't know how much you're going to hear from me today because, you know, we've got so many sound bites to go through and so much to talk about last night. And of course, everybody's big questions were, you know, what was Donald Trump going to do, or what was Donald Trump going to say, or, you know, was he going to attack everybody? Was he just going to just rip on it, go down the line and rip on everybody, you know? And it just, wow, it was just a really fascinating, really interesting night all around. And like I said, we've got a ton of debate stuff to get to. Plus, I actually have some other things too here. While we're talking debates and all that is the multitude of stuff that we have to talk about the debate, I've got Hillary Clinton's poll numbers, which, well, they're not good. Let's leave it at that for now, shall we? And of course, we've got the FBI looking into her email server. Let's see, what else have I got? I don't even know if I'm going to be able to get to all of it. Of course, we've got there's some brand new power plant regulations that President Obama announced this week. And, you know, we'll have to do a little, if I can actually even get to it today, we're going to have to do a little bit of reminding people about what Senator Obama said, then presidential candidate Obama said about the building of power plants and the use of coal. And, What might happen to your electric bill should he get his way? And he apparently is going to, and just a ton of stuff. Like I said, I'm glad you guys can all be with me this morning because, wow, it was a bombshell night last night. The chat room, of course, is open. Please go there, and you can call in here. The number is 347-847-857-2620. Wow, let's start at the top, I guess. You know, like I said, I think that the one thing that was on everybody's mind was, you know, what's Donald Trump going to do? What's Donald Trump going to say? And you know, was he going to make everybody's life miserable last night? And, you know, I think maybe the only person's life that he might have made remotely miserable last night was Rand Paul. I'm going to start here with kind of really, really at the top and just talk about the Fox News channel moderators of this debate. There was some discussion, I think, on the internet yesterday and on radio shows on various outlets that there was some rumors going around, some scuttlebutt about some big money Republican donors who were trying to kind of get guys like Marco Rubio, guys like Ted Cruz, guys like Rand Paul, and kind of make them guns for hire, if you will, and kind of see to it that these guys would take out Donald Trump last night. Because let's face it, the establishment is scared to death of a guy like Donald Trump because he says what he thinks and he doesn't need anybody's money. So that those two things right there tell the establishment guys that he cannot be controlled. They can't control him. And so there was some talk of that yesterday. And I saw a lot of this last night while I was live blogging on Twitter, that a lot of people were of the feeling that that it was kind of get Donald Trump night as far as the moderators were concerned. And I did see a couple of people post the fact that they thought that all of the questions that were posted to Donald Trump were based not so much based on a professional record. He obviously doesn't have a political record that they can draw from, but they would have had to go to his professional record, his business dealings and things of that nature. And a lot of people felt that questions that were posed to Donald Trump were more of an attack on his character than opposed to what he would do in certain situations and about certain situations as president of the United States. And I thought it started right out of the box. It started right from jump with the first question from Brett Baer about these candidates pledging their support to the eventual Republican nominee and pledging not to run as a third party candidate. And we know that there has been some talk about Donald Trump maybe threatening to do that if he felt he wasn't treated fairly. But here's kind of how it went.
How much you love hand-raising questions. So we promise this is the only one tonight, the only one. Is there anyone on stage, and can I see hands, who is unwilling tonight to pledge your support to the eventual nominee of the Republican Party and pledge to not run an independent campaign against that person? Again, we're looking for you to raise your hand now. Raise your hand now if you won't make that pledge tonight. Mr. Trump. So, Mr. Trump, to be clear, you're standing on a Republican primary debate.
I fully understand.
The place where the RNC will give the nominee the nod.
I fully understand.
And that experts say an independent run would almost certainly hand the race over to Democrats and likely another Clinton. You can't say tonight that you can make that pledge.
I cannot say. I have to respect the person that if it's not me, the person that wins. If I do win and I'm leading by quite a bit, that's what I want to do. I can totally make that pledge. If I'm the nominee, I will pledge I will not run as an independent. But and I am discussing it with everybody, but I'm talking about a lot of leverage. We want to win, and we will win. But I want to win as the Republican. I want to run as the Republican nominee.
So tonight you can't say if another one of these...
This is what's wrong. I mean, okay. This is what's wrong. He buys and sells politicians of all stripes. He's already, he's already hedging his bet on the Clintons, okay? So if he doesn't run as a Republican, maybe he supports Clinton or maybe runs as an independent.
Okay.
But I'd say that he's already hedging his bets because he's used to buying politicians.
Well, I've given him plenty of money.
Just to be clear, you can't make it. We're going to move on. You're not going to make the pledge tonight.
I will not make the pledge at this time.
Okay.
Okay, having a little difficulty with that soundbite. But basically, what happened here was that Donald Trump, when Brett Baer asked the candidates, would anyone be willing to take the pledge tonight, meaning last night, of not only supporting the eventual Republican nominee, whoever that might be, but also pledging not to run as a third-party candidate, the only hand that went up was Donald Trump. And it'll be interesting to see if he, I mean, you heard the reaction from the crowd, the reaction from the audience. They were not happy with that because they know, everybody knows that if Donald Trump or anybody else, the only thing that you have to say as to what might happen in that eventuality, the explanation for that is two words, Ross Perot. We all know what happened in 1992 when Ross Perot ran and he took a lot of votes away from George H.W. Bush, and Bill Clinton won a presidential election with 43% of the vote. And anybody with who follows politics in any way, shape, or fashion knows that that is what's going to happen should someone decide to run as a third-party candidate. And so it's going to be interesting to see. I looked all over this morning, could not find any overnight poll numbers as yet. You know, it might still be early, so we'll see. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of polling data come out over the weekend. But it'll be interesting to see how this moves Donald Trump's poll numbers. Either way, will he stay where he is? Because we all know the one thing that people like about Donald Trump is his honesty, that he's perfectly willing to say what is on his mind and say what he thinks regardless, and he doesn't care what people think about it. He doesn't care whether you like it or not. And the one thing, the other thing that stood out to me about this exchange between Donald Trump and Senator Rand Paul was that Rand Paul attacked, and maybe for lack of a better word, Rand Paul jumped on Donald Trump. Not only did he jump on Donald Trump early, he jumped on Chris Christie. And I think probably what he was trying to do was to establish himself as somebody who is strong, somebody who's going to stand up to and say what he thinks, kind of in a Donald Trump kind of fashion. But I don't know if he pulled that off. Again, it's going to be interesting to see polling numbers and see if these two exchanges helped Rand Paul or hurt him. Because I'm not so sure at this point. I could be wrong, you know. But it'll be interesting to see if he did himself any favors. Right now, I don't know that he did. But and of course we'll talk about Chris Christie and Rand Paul here in a minute, because we know that first of all there's been some words exchanged between the two of them. There's been some heated exchanges, and it may be that there is that there's no love lost between these two guys. But you know, I do want to say something about the earlier debate. Like I said, I didn't see all of it. I've seen bits and pieces of it online. What I did see, if you're talking about candidates being combative, like I said, that was the one thing that's what when I witnessed the exchange between Rand Paul and Donald Trump, and then again with Rand Paul and Chris Christie, the first word that came to my mind was combative. And I'm sure that there's a fine line between portraying yourself as someone who's strong and who's going to stand up and being combative. And the few clips that I saw of the first debate, one of the things that I would say about former Texas Governor Rick Perry was that I got the same impressions from him, that he was combative. And I think in his case, he's trying to exercise some 2012 demons, because, you know, everybody remembers the debate in 2012 where he lost his train of thought. He was talking about departments that he would get rid of, and he had kind of a total brain fart and forgot one. Well, we came to find out later that he had recently had back surgery. He was on some pain medication, which really kind of led me to believe then why did you think that was a good time to do, of all things, run for president of the United States? But that's a moot point at this point. But that was the one thing, the first word that came to my mind when I watched those clips of Rick Perry was combative. And know that this being, somebody described this last night, this first debate last night, as being the first game of the season, and I kind of like that. It is. For those of us who are political geeks, this is the first game of the season. And it's just stoking us up more and getting us more excited. But from the earlier debate, the one person that really, really stood out, and from all of the poll numbers and all of the opinion polls and every place that you can find stats from, Carly Fiorina ran away with this first debate. She kicked butt and she took names. And I was really, really pleasantly surprised to see that. And in an interview that she did with Chris Matthews, she explained that her goal was to introduce herself to people, because I believe this, the stat that she gave was that only 46% of the American people knew who she was. And so this was her coming out party of sorts, and it was her way of introducing herself to the American people. And every clip I've seen, by all accounts, she did a fantastic job, and I would be astounded if she is not on the main stage next time, if she is not one of the top 10 candidates on that stage for the primetime debate next time. And this is one of my favorite Carly Fiorina clips. In fact, she talked about this back in February at CPAC about some things that she would do should she be elected president, about some of the things that she would do her.
I want to go to Carly Fiorina on this, but I want to ask you some of what I just asked to Governor Perry. The issue is that the allies that we are with sometimes have groups within them that funnel money to terrorists as well. This is a complicated situation. Are you okay with us being on their side?
Yep, sometimes it's a complicated situation, but some things are black and white. On day one in the Oval Office, I would make two phone calls. The first one would be to my good friend Bibi Netanyahu to reassure him we will stand with the state of Israel. The second will be to the Supreme Leader of Iran. He might not take my phone call, but he would get the message, and the message is this. Until you open every nuclear and every military facility to full open anytime, anywhere, for real inspections, we are going to make it as difficult as possible for you to move money around the global financial system. I hope Congress says no to this deal, but realistically, even if they do, the money is flowing. China and Russia have never been on our side of the table. The Europeans have moved on. We have to stop the money flow. And by the way, as important as those two phone calls are, they are also very important because they say this: America is back in the leadership business. And when America does not lead, the world is a dangerous and a tragic place. This is a bad deal. Obama broke every rule of negotiation. Yes, our allies are not perfect, but Iran is at the heart of most of the evil that is going on in the Middle East through their proxies.
Very, very briefly, would you help our allies in that region to get nuclear weapons if Iran has them?
Let me tell you what I would do immediately. Day two in the Oval Office, I would hold a Camp David summit with our Arab allies, not to talk them into this lousy deal with Iran, but to say to them, what is it that you need to defeat ISIL? You know, Obama has presented the American people with a false choice every time. It's what I've done or not done, or it's war. It is a false choice. King Abdullah of Jordan, a man I've known for a long time, has been asking for bombs and materiel. We have not provided them. He has gone to China. The Kurds have been asking us to arm them for 3 years. We haven't done so. The Egyptians have asked us to share intelligence. We're not doing it. We have Arab allies. They are not perfect. I know everyone, but they need to see leadership, support, and resolve from the United States of America, and we can help.
Wow. She was sharp. She was concise. She thought well on her feet. She explained herself perfectly. Just, I think a lot of people just had to be blown away by Carly Fiorina last night. And like I said, I think that she is going to, she's going to be on in that top tier of candidates next time. She's going to be in prime time next time. And One of the themes of her campaign, I think, is leadership, because it's what America is so sorely lacking right now, is leadership. I can remember the first time that I heard the phrase "lead from behind," and my reaction to that was, what the hell is lead from behind? How can you lead from behind? It's an oxymoron. It doesn't make any sense. Well, that's exactly what Barack Obama and this administration do. It's a perfect illustration. It's a perfect description of what they do. They lead from behind. The candidates talked to, and the moderators posed questions about Syria and the line in the sand, supposedly that mythical, magical line in the sand that President Obama drew for the Syrians a while back. And there were no consequences. There was nothing that happened if they crossed that line. And also, I think, I don't have any clips of this, but I think that, and actually this was at another CPAC speech back in February, and it was made by Florida Senator Marco Rubio when he said that our enemies no longer fear us and our allies no longer respect us, and it's exactly right. And Carly Fiorina is right on the money when she talks about leadership and the absolute total lack thereof of leadership right now in this country. And like I said, the clips that I saw of her last night and the other candidates in that first debate said she totally ran away with it, and really by all accounts she was the winner in that first debate last night. And it'll be equally interesting to see what happens with her poll numbers, and I think she's going to get a huge bump from it, and just be interesting to see how huge it is. But I'm going to take a short break here. We've got so much more to get to. Of course, like I said, we're going to talk about Chris Christie and Rand Paul. That was probably one of the best 3-4 minutes of the whole night last night. And, you know, just a lot of other things to get to debate-wise and otherwise. So stay right where you are. Nobody go anywhere. There is a ton of stuff left for me to talk about. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with me on this TGIF Friday morning. Stay right where you are. I'll be right back. Listening to the post-debate edition of Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble. Thank you one and all for hanging with me today, TGIF. It is finally Friday. The weekend is upon us. I know that I am ever so grateful about that, and I'm sure you are too. But, of course, we are talking all things debate. It was a really, really fascinating night for those of us who are political geeks last night. And like I said, it's kind of Christmas and your birthday all rolled into one, you know. But this must be what people who whose birthday falls on Christmas, this must be what it's like for them. But, you know, questions, of course, were what was Donald Trump going to do and say. And he had several heated exchanges. The first one, of course, was with Senator Rand Paul. He kind of even had a little bit of an exchange with Fox News moderator Megyn Kelly also. He kind of accused her of she had posed a question to him about some statements that he had made regarding women in the past, and he jumped on her a little bit about that and kind of accused her of not treating him very well. And you know, Donald Trump may be a lot of things, and whether or not this was a good or a bad night for him, he did not do as well. My own thought, he did not do as well as I would have hoped he did, because one of the things that he does, and you know, I'm sure we can all guess that maybe Donald Trump is probably a better talker than he is a listener, but when someone disagrees with him, that he kind of tends to jump on him. And you can't do that in politics. You can't. People are going to have differing opinions. People are going to have different points of view. People are going to have different ideas about ways of doing things. And just because you disagree with them, just because they have a different view of things, I think that it's something, if he really is going to move on and he really is going to go much further than he does, I think it may be something that he has to curb a little bit. And whether or not he can or even will do that, you know, Donald Trump is who he is. He's his own man, and he's going to do what he wants to do, and hell with everybody else. But I think if he hurt himself last night, it's because of his automatic knee-jerk reaction when people don't agree with him or that he feels, when they don't agree with him, that maybe he is feeling like they're attacking him. And you can disagree with somebody without attacking them. We all know that. But I don't know. I think he kind of equates the two. And it may be something that should he go further in this process, that it's going to hurt him. But the other person I thought that said in the clips I saw of the earlier debate with the other candidate, the other seven candidates, and I saw some clips of former Texas Governor Rick Perry. The first word that came to my mind about his performance was combative. Kind of the same thing, that the same feeling I got with Kentucky Senator Rand Paul last night, because he had these two very heated exchanges pretty early on in the debate. The first one, of course, with Donald Trump, and the second one here when they were just discussing the Patriot Act and collecting data and phone records and things of that nature, not just on suspected terrorists, but on normal, everyday, average Americans. And this is the exchange between New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and Kentucky Senator Rand Paul.
Governor Christie, you have said that Senator Paul's opposition to the NSA's collection of phone records has made the United States weaker and more vulnerable, even going so far as to say that he should be called before Congress to answer for it if we should be hit by another terrorist attack. Do you really believe you can assign blame to Senator Paul just for opposing the bulk collection of people's phone records in the event of a terrorist attack?
Yes, I do. And I'll tell you why. Because I'm the only person on this stage who's actually filed applications under the Patriot Act, who have gone before the federal, the Foreign Intelligence Service Court, who has prosecuted and investigated and jailed terrorists in this country after September 11th. I was appointed U.S. Attorney by President Bush on September 10th, 2001, and the world changed enormously the next day, and it happened in my state. This is not theoretical to me. I went to the funerals, We lost friends of ours in the Trade Center that day. My own wife was two blocks from the Trade Center that day at her office, having gone through it that morning. When you actually have to be responsible for doing this, you can do it, and we did it for 7 years in my office, respecting civil liberties and protecting the homeland. And I will make no apologies ever for protecting the lives and the safety of the American people. We have to give more tools to our folks to be able to do that, not fewer, and then trust those people and oversee them to do it the right way as president. That is exactly what I'll do.
Megan, may I respond?
Go ahead, sir.
I want to collect more records from terrorists, but less records from innocent Americans. The Fourth Amendment was what we fought the revolution over. John Adams said it was the spark that led to our war for independence, and I'm proud of standing for the Bill of Rights, and I will continue to stand for the Bill of Rights.
And Megan, that's a completely ridiculous answer. I want to collect more records from terrorists, but less records from other people. How are you supposed to know, Megan?
Use the Fourth Amendment.
How are you supposed
to? Use the Fourth Amendment.
No, I'll tell you how you.
Get a warrant.
Let me tell you something.
Get a judge to sign a warrant.
Senator.
Go ahead, wait, Governor Christie, make your point.
Listen, Senator, you know, when you're sitting in a subcommittee just blowing hot air about this, you can say things like that. When you're responsible for protecting the lives of the American people, then what you need to do is to make sure that you use the system the way it's supposed to work.
Here's the problem, Governor. You fundamentally misunderstand the Bill of Rights. Every time you did a case, you got a warrant from a judge. I'm talking about searches without warrants, indiscriminately of all Americans' records, and that's what I fought to end. I don't trust President Obama with our records. I know you gave him a big hug, and if you want to give him a big hug again, go right ahead.
And you know, Senator Paul, you know, the hugs that I remember are the hugs that I gave to the families who lost their people on September 11th. Those are the hugs I remember. And those had nothing to do, with politics, unlike what you're doing by cutting speeches on the floor of the Senate, then putting them on the Internet within a half an hour to raise money for your campaign,
right,
and while still putting our country at risk.
All right, we're going to cut it off there. We have plenty more we want to get to. That was an interesting exchange. Thank you for that.
The lesson there is, I think everybody's heard the phrase, don't mess with Texas. I don't know. Don't mess with Jersey, man. That's, in fact, I saw a great tweet from somebody, I can't remember who it was last night, that said, and this is a family show, so I'm going to clean it up here a little bit, but basically what they said was kind of a tweet directed towards Rand Paul, and it said, don't screw with Jersey, midget. I thought that was kind of amusing, kind of funny. But, you know, I think that whatever you think about Chris Christie, when the events of that horrible day, when the events of 9/11 hit you personally like that, you're going to get a little passionate about it. And he made some good points. They both did. They both, because in Senator Paul's case, you know, there's too much ignoring of the Constitution going on. We have that going on right now today with this president. We don't need to elect another president, regardless of party, who's going to do the same thing. So I think that there were some good points made on in both their cases. But discussion last night, of course, I think in the time they had and the amount of people that you have on stage, you know, it's hard to get to everybody and really hard to A, get all your questions in, and B, make sure that everybody gets a fair shot and make sure that everybody gets equal time to say what they want to say. And, of course, a lot of the discussion last night centered on terrorism and centered on ISIS and things like you know, inspecting phone records to see if someone has terrorist ties. Are they making phone calls overseas? Are they frequenting websites and chat rooms and things of that nature that are also frequented by terrorists? And Ted Cruz made some very good points on this, and it's one of the reasons why he is so popular. And let's listen as Senator Cruz talks about Islamic terrorism and about the fact that we have a sitting president right now that can't seem to utter those words.
Senator Cruz, I want to talk to you about this because many of the Facebook users and the folks on Facebook wanted the candidates to speak to ISIS tonight. You asked the chairman of the Joint Chiefs a question. What would it take to destroy ISIS in 90 days? He told you ISIS will only be truly destroyed once they are rejected by the populations in which they hide. And then you accused him of pushing Medicaid for the Iraqis. How would you destroy ISIS in 90 days?
Megan, we need a commander-in-chief that speaks the truth. We will not defeat radical Islamic terrorism so long as we have a president unwilling to utter the words radical Islamic terrorism. When I asked General Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, what would be required militarily to destroy ISIS, he said there is no military solution. We need to change the conditions on the ground so that young men are not in poverty and susceptible to radicalization. That, with all due respect, is nonsense. It's the same answer the State Department gave, that we need to give them jobs. What we need is a commander-in-chief who makes clear, if you join ISIS, if you wage jihad on America, then you are signing your death warrant.
You don't see it as an ideological problem? An ideological problem in addition to a military one.
Megan, of course it's an ideological problem. That's one of the reasons why I introduced the Expatriate Terrorist Act in the Senate that said if any American travels to the Middle East and joins ISIS, that he or she forfeits their citizenship so they don't use a passport to come back and wage jihad on Americans. Yes, it is ideological. And let me contrast President Obama, who at the prayer breakfast essentially acted as an apologist. He said, well, gosh, the Crusades, the Inquisitions. We need a president that shows the courage that Egypt's President al-Sisi did, a Muslim, when he called out the radical Islamic terrorists who are threatening the world.
And that is exactly what we need. It's exactly what needs to happen. We need a president who is not only going to be a leader and to show leadership, like Carly Fiorina talked about, be afraid to say the words radical Islamic terrorism, because that is what it is. You cannot defeat your enemy if you cannot call them what they are and you cannot say their name. It's impossible. And it was a brilliant answer by Senator Cruz. And there was another great bite that I wanted to get from Senator Cruz, and I looked all over and couldn't find it. He also talked about what he would do his first day in office, and it was brilliant. It was bam, 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 right down the line, and I wish I could have found it so you could hear it. But I'm sure if you going over all of the debate sound bites and clips and things like that today, that somebody will run across it and you'll it'll kind of click for you that's what I'm talking about. But one of the things that Senator Marco Rubio brought up last night as well, and it was really kind of an amusing quote from him, is I believe that the candidates were asked a question about something to do with their faith and something to the effect if they had conversations with God about making their decision to run and things of that nature. And one of the things that I should have got this clip because it was really good, what that Senator Rubio said was that he felt that Republicans were very blessed because we had such a fantastic slate of candidates when the Democrats couldn't even come up with one. And it got him a pretty good laugh. And there were several of those moments like that last night that kind of broke up the I don't want to say tension, but kind of broke up the heated exchanges between people. And I mean those two, Rand Paul and Donald Trump, Rand Paul and Chris Christie, are really kind of the ones that are probably going to be played the most today, and they're probably the ones that are going to stand out the most today. I got other things I want to talk about today. I don't want to make this all debate, all hour, but I do know that's what people want to talk about. They want to armchair quarterback, and they want to talk about the things they liked and the things they didn't like, and the people who impressed and who didn't impress. And I thought one of the best, I think, as far as I can tell, just about everybody, out of all of the, when the candidates were asked to give closing statements towards the end of the debate, probably the best one came from Dr. Ben Carson.
Closing statement.
Well, I haven't said anything about me being the only one to do anything, so let me try that. I'm the only one to separate Siamese twins. The only one to operate on babies while they were still in the mother's womb. The only one to take out half of a brain, although you would think if you go to Washington that someone had beat me to it. But, but I'm very hopeful that I'm not the only one who's willing to pick up the baton of freedom, because freedom is not free, and we must fight for it every day. Every one of us must fight for it, because we're fighting for our children and the next generation.
Brilliant closing statement from Dr. Ben Carson. And it garnered a lot of chuckles from the other candidates who were on stage with him as well. You know, I think that, like I said, my observations about the whole thing were that Donald Trump did not do as well as I thought he would, I think. And it could have something to do with the fact that he has said that he is not a debater, that this was kind of his first rodeo, that he had never done anything like this before. So in all fairness, maybe we need to keep that in mind. But I said he didn't do as well as I thought he might, and the reason that I think that is because I think that he let some of the things that the other candidates said, that he kind of let it get under his skin a little bit. And for somebody who is a seasoned, experienced businessman, the business world is probably just as rough and tumble as the political world. Maybe not as much, but it's right up there. And so I can't see that he would not have already, in his years and years in the business world, have developed a thicker skin. But again, this is his first go around with this kind of thing, and we will see what happens. Now, what would be really interesting to see, and this is purely hypothetical, I mean, we don't, you know, we'll have to see how numbers go. And the thing with poll numbers is that all these guys are going to ebb and flow. They're all going to be high. They're all going to be low. It's going to be such a roller coaster ride between now and next year. But let's say hypothetically that Donald Trump's numbers start to dive. And by the next debate, I'm not sure when that is, but by the next debate, let's say that his poll numbers put him in that second tier of candidates, that he's not in that top 10, that he is not on that center stage. Is he going to look at that as not being treated well, or is he going to look at it as some sort of personal slight and not being that he's being treated just like every other candidate, that he is being looked at based on his poll numbers as to whether he is in or out for that top 10 tier of candidates? And, you know, there may not even be 17 candidates by the time the next debate rolls around. I mean, you know, we don't know. We just don't know. Then I thought he would. I think that he displayed a lot of what people like about him. And it's actually, ironically, the things that people like about him, I think, are the things they like about Trump, that he is a lot of people may say, well, you know, a Republican in New Jersey is very different from a Republican in Nebraska. And that's true. Somebody who is a Republican in a blue state like that, on either coast like that, may be a little more liberal than someone who is in a red state in the Midwest. I'll grant you that. I believe that as well. But he was very sharp. He was very articulate. And I thought he did very well. For the most part, I think everybody did very well. There was I didn't think there was any big standout. I thought that several people had moments, And if they didn't have a moment last night, they're going to have moments in the future in space. So I really didn't think that anybody last night really, you know, kind of elevated themselves. Like I said, they all had their moments last night. And so we'll see. It was a fascinating, interesting night. And like I said, I'm not sure when the next debate is, but, you know, political geeks like me, we're going to be ready for it. We are, bring on the next one, baby. We're ready for it. But I'm going to take a quick break here. We're going to move on to some other things very quickly before I got to get out of here. But you are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio, the post-debate edition. I am your host, Becky Noble. Stay right where you are. I've got lots more to talk about, and we will talk about as much of it as we can. I will be right back. Stay close. You're listening to the post-debate edition of Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am your host, Becky Noble, TGIF, peeps. The weekend is upon us. And, of course, we are doing all things armchair quarterbacking the 2015 GOP Republican debate last night. It was interesting, to say the least. And I know everybody has their thoughts and their opinions about it. And like I heard somebody say last night, it's the first game of the season. We're just revving up. We're just getting ready to go. But as they say in other news, actually this is probably it's presidential news. But Hillary Clinton keeps having bad weeks. It's not good for her. I don't think, and a lot of people I think are not convinced that Hillary Clinton is a done deal, and. This is from Newsmax. This is from Tuesday of this week. That Hillary's poll numbers are not looking good, and they're looking good not looking good in a demographic that traditionally she has always been very high with, and that is white female voters. And this is from a Wall Street Journal NBC poll that she is having a hard time with. It said that it was a poll conducted July 26th through the 30th. 1,000 adults were polled, showed that among white women with at least a college degree, the group sharing the most similarities with her, Hillary Clinton's numbers had turned negative, with 47% holding an unfavorable view of her and 43% showing a positive view. In comparison, in June, the same demographic showed 51% with a positive view and 38% negative. And, that could be that because of that, well, before I get to the other thing I want to say about it, that she started running some television ads in Iowa and New Hampshire, and, she's, portraying herself, I'm just like one of you, I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother, I'm, that kind of thing, her emphasis on family values, which is funny because Democrats could give a rat's behind about family values and anything remotely related to that until it's going to help them. Any other time, they could care less. But, we'll see how those commercials do for her. And other results in this poll also showed trends that could be problematic for her, and that is that independent support is dwindling. In the first quarter of this year, independents were nearly even, but in the new poll, only 27% had a positive opinion of Hillary Clinton, and 52% saw her negatively. Another bad thing is that among African-American voters, her numbers are also dropping. In June, she had support of 81% to 3% in July. The numbers went to just 66% positive and 15% negative. The poll also showed the numbers narrowing between Hillary Clinton and her second-place challenger, who would be Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. In the July poll, Clinton led Sanders by 59% to 25%, but in June, her lead was wider, 76 to 15. Well, could that have anything to do with her problem with the FBI now launching a criminal investigation into her email server? This is also going to be interesting to see exactly just how much of a problem it may be for her. And there's obviously things that she has lied about pertaining to these emails and pertaining to this server. And I wish I had more time to get into this, but we'll of course be getting into it more, in the coming weeks as the investigation goes forth. And one of her press secretary, Nick Merrill, give you a real quick quote here. Quote, she, meaning Hillary Clinton, did not send nor receive any emails that were marked classified at the time. We want to ensure that appropriate procedures are followed as these emails are reviewed while not unduly delaying the release of her emails. We want that to happen as quickly and transparently as possible. And the translation to that is we want to wrap this FBI nonsense, this FBI mischief, this FBI distraction that is wasting our time. We can wrap this up as soon as we can so we can fill up the nomination. But translation of what's going on there. But also this week we had some new coal plant regulations that were announced by the Obama administration. And I think that maybe we need a little reminder here of then presidential candidate Barack Obama talking about the coal industry.
The problem is, can you get the American people to say this is really important and force their representatives to do the right thing? That requires mobilizing a citizenry. That requires them understanding what is at stake. And climate change is a great example. When I was asked earlier about the issue of coal, under my plan of a cap and trade system, electricity rates would necessarily skyrocket. Even regardless of what I say about whether coal is good or bad, because I'm capping greenhouse gases, coal power plants, you know, natural gas, you name whatever the plants were, whatever the industry was, they would have to retrofit their operations. That will cost money. They will pass that money on to consumers.
There you have it. That was then presidential candidate Barack Obama, Senator Obama, talking about his plan for greenhouse gas emissions and his plans for the coal industry. And it is just, it's the latest chapter in the fundamental transformation of America. And I think that people forget that little tidbit that, you know, over and over again, he told us what he was going to do. And he's running out of time, so he knows at this point he has to work fast. But very quickly here, before I get out of here for the day. The W2EF segment today comes to us in sound clip format. This is an interview with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and this is an interview that she did with Mr. Tingles himself, Chris Matthews, recently. And Chris Matthews asked her, of Chris Matthews of all people, asked Debbie Wasserman Schultz, what is the difference between a Democrat and a socialist? And, well, Deb was sweating a little bit. Deb was having a hard time.
So American people are with Democrats.
Okay.
They want to
I know
make sure
you have to
that the president
the
of the United
do you
States...
Want to
no,
see
no,
Bernie
this is not about me.
Okay, do you
want to
see Bernie Sanders speak at the Democratic Convention, win or lose? You want to have him up there on the stage as a socialist representing the Democratic Party? Do you want him up there?
Bernie Sanders
do you want him on the floor of the
Bernie
convention?
Bernie Sanders has been a good
should
Democrat,
he speak?
Caucuses with the Democrats. Of course he should speak.
Speak in prime time.
He should speak at the Democratic National Convention.
In prime
convention.
Time, with everybody watching.
Bernie Sanders represents a we are a big tech
party. So the
party.
Answer is yes.
I did. I said yes. I can say
but
yes.
But in prime time.
I don't know what time he should speak.
Oh, maybe
certainly.
When nobody's watching, you mean?
No. Of course Bernie Sanders should speak. He should speak in a slot where the appeal that he has across the board, the progressive, populist message that he has that resonates deeply and widely with the American people, not just with Democrats. Absolutely, that should be featured. The difference between us and the Republicans is that we really are a big tent party.
Well, what is the difference between a Democrat and a socialist? I used to think there was a big difference. What do you think it is?
The difference between...
Is a Democrat like Hillary Clinton
the more
and a socialist like Bernie Sanders?
What's the difference between being a Democrat and being a Republican?
Well, what's the bigger difference? What's the big difference between a Democrat and a socialist? You're the chairman of the Democratic Party. Tell me the difference between you and a socialist.
The relevant debate that we'll be having over the course of this campaign is what's the difference between a Democrat and a Republican?
I think there's a huge difference.
Lesson for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Deb, if a guy like Chris Matthews used to think that there was a difference between Democrats and socialists, but he doesn't anymore, you may have a problem. With that, I am out of here. Everyone have a fabulous weekend. Please go to theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com, theblacksphere.net, and facebook.com/BeckyNoble. You can find me on Twitter @PatriotWitch. Everyone have a fantastic weekend. Thanks for hanging out with me today. I will see you next time.